need to talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else, you can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience, or a combination, my world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, fantasize with you, no fantasy is too taboo, and help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
You're listening to Radio Susie One on the World Wide Web. And now, here she is, Dr. Susan Block.
Brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners, artists and exhibitionists, voyeurs and connoisseurs, ahoy there, mates and primates and sea lovers and landlubbers. Yes, indeed. First things first. Here in the little love church of the Bonobo Way, in the village of Bonoboville, at the Dr. Susan Block Institute, on the Dr. Susan Block Show, it's Max's birthday! Woo! Can I get an amen? And a woman.
Can you turn his mic up?
Hey, women.
Hello, hello.
Ahoy there. It's Captain Max's birthday.
Hello, hello, hello,
so
hello.
We're here with Captain Max.
How are you?
I'm good.
How are you doing?
You know, well, I mean, I sound a little bit like I've been snorting cocaine, but I have not. I have not. No music.
Okay.
We're now going to listen to the music of the spheres.
Free from music.
And the years of Max's life. That's right. And no, I'm allergic to the fires. Well, I have a sinus sensitivity. But I'm very happy to be celebrating your 1097th birthday. Well, it's only the 76th, but...
Just like the gasoline, 76.
Yeah. 76 trombones, Route 76. There's
Route
a lot of power
Route
to 76. 76 trombones, maybe.
Wait a minute.
And Route 76.
66.
That's
Can
Route
Can you
66.
Turn up the that's studio right. monitors a
okay.
little bit?
The 76ers, my home team from Philadelphia. So that's even better than Route 76, which I'm sure there is a Route 76. It's just not Route 66, which is the famous one.
Mike, can you turn up the studio monitor a little bit?
Even though it's Max's birthday and he's supposed to be being the star, he is still directing because he is, you know, the... creator, the executive producer, officially. There is no director of this show, but he is the executive producer of the Dr. Susan Block Show, as well as the publisher of many things, but besides it being Max's birthday, it is also the fifth anniversary of the Bonobo Way, which I always remember because I gave it to Max on his birthday. Even though he's the publisher of it, and that one is warped from spanking. But, here's another one. Here. Yeah, okay. It's good. Good to have ones that
I like
warped.
The spanking
They're good
one.
See? You know, it's almost Thanksgiving.
You can smell it.
And they're added value. Value added.
I'm That's sniffing right. it.
Yep. Happy birthday.
Thank you, darling.
Little spank, 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 spank for the birthday boy.
Busted.
And so, Prince Maximilian Rudolf Leblevich de Lubkowitz de Filingeri was born 76 years ago in the hospital attached to the Vatican because they were afraid of the bombs because a lot of things were being bombed. It was World War II. It was November 8th, 1943.
They didn't bomb Rome, but they were afraid that the Allies or the Nazis or whoever was in charge that day was going to bomb the Vatican, perhaps.
Vatican.
So there's a hospital right next to the Vatican, and some of the kids, I don't want to be elitist, some of the rich kids are born in that hospital.
Well, right, because they weren't going to bomb the Vatican.
Right.
They had some limitations, I guess, at that time. And so they had some, I don't know if I'd call them morals, but qualms, okay? And so one of them was, we're not going to bomb the Vatican, probably because the Vatican were a bunch of Nazis, right?
Well, perhaps, but also it's a separate state.
Right. Well, that was the idea. And so you weren't bombed, but then they spirited you away rather quickly to the Italian countryside, to the Alps.
They sent me to the Alps. They sent me to Switzerland for
a while. Yeah.
They sent me to the farmlands at the time. I'm actually a war baby, and I was traumatized by it.
Yes.
I'm still traumatized by it.
Can we get some relief for that, like benefits or...
Well, we can't say
PTSD.
Max, he's the bomb.
Okay, so you have some messages from fans. It's Max's birthday, everybody. And so we're not having any outside guests, although we are taking messages from fans. So you can write to us on Facebook or call us at 626-461-5212 or 1-866-289-7068. Brian James Lucas, a.k.a. Chef Be Live, says we should drive over. All right, you know.
Sure.
We'll have some cake. Happy birthday, Maximilian.
We have cookies
it's
also.
Danielle. Well, Danielle's birthday was very recently, so happy birthday, Danielle.
Happy birthday,
Danielle.
Yes, Danielle Watts. What's happening, Danielle?
What's
I hope
playing?
You had a really sexy birthday. And so, yeah, you guys could come over. You know the secret address, and you can jump over the moat, you know, that Trump has filled with alligators. No, he doesn't. Not in Bonoboville, maybe at the border. But we have him gagged with a sailor's hat because it's Max's birthday, and we're all in this boat, in this ship of fools for
we're
love.
In a ship of fools.
Yeah. And Who Keith Turner says happy birthday.
Okay.
Thank you, Keith Turner. And Ray Serino.
Ray
says
Serino.
Happy birthday.
Hi, Ray. Long time no hear from you.
Yeah.
But we love you.
Ray's a great artist.
Yeah.
He makes some sex toys. He made some Burning Man edifices. We love Ray. Come on back. Come visit us. Oh, and he made that really cool thing that we've got to do, put it on Clip-O-Rama, where it's like a glass dildo that you can see inside the pussy. And it's a camera. Right.
Oh.
Camera lens. Yeah, it's very
intense.
Cool. Our camera people are going, oh, ooh, yes, it's a camera. Goes right into the puss.
That's how mine's always.
So the birthday boy's Just microphone has gone out.
No, I got it. I got it.
Oh, he's got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Prince Max, we should say a little bit about your princeliness, just a little bit, because your life is what's important. But the ancestors of Prince Max are also important. This is a little picture of Prince Max right here.
Guys.
Maybe some of our cameras can show this. We should turn and show this on one of the... Where's Mar? Did Mar disappear? Show this. Unless you want to just edit it in. But It's already in. Okay. Well, anyway, that's little Max when he was a little baby.
By the way, two years old,
and that was painted by nuns.
This portrait here was painted by a nun.
Oh, a nun, not several nuns.
Not several nuns.
But it took a while.
There was just one nun with a paintbrush.
Right. And you're so cute. You still look the same.
Yeah.
You do. And so then there's this poster here that Stu made, and it's also a birthday card from the people in Bonoboville. And
beautiful.
It says the Lubkovitz Palace. That's what the card is. And then there's some Lubkovitz ancestors, and that's your Czech branch from your father's side. And then there's the Phil and Jerry branch. Now,
wait a minute. We're both shooting the same thing here.
Yeah, don't have both shooting the same
okay.
thing.
No, no, okay. It's okay. That's Facebook.
Okay. So now that maybe the most famous relative, although the Lubkovitzes are pretty famous for their beer now. No, for they were the patrons of Beethoven,
right.
And then. You know, the Filangieri's were also extremely well-known in Italy, but Gaetano Filangieri is probably your best-known ancestor, who was a philosopher and a friend of Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, and advised them on life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the whole thing. There on the screen is a bust of Gaetano Filangieri. He was quite a genius. And he really did advise Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and he was just, he wrote all kinds of philosophical treatises, right? So there's Gaetano Filangieri. And so you were saying what he's really well known for besides advising on the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, and the Constitution.
Test, test.
Besides that, what is he well known for?
Well, okay, so he took the Neapolitan kingdom out of basically the Stone Age.
Now, Neapolitans, they made the ice cream, right? No, that's Naples.
That's Naples.
And the pizza, right?
Yeah, and the pizza, the pizza margherita came from Naples. But here's some of the things that he dealt with. He wrote 6 books, and they were called The Science of Politics.
Oh.
And some of his theories in that book was the balance of power among nations,
right,
and territories. The compulsory education of every child.
Public education.
Public education.
You hear that, Betsy DeVos?
Yeah. He is considered by the communists the first communist. One of the other things that he believed in, he says, no government can survive when it doesn't take care of the earth.
Oh, he was the first ecologist.
This was a long time ago, you have to remember.
Take care of the earth. Way back in the 18th century.
Yeah, 18th century. And he was a reformer of prisons. So if you go to Italy today, all the prisons, the street is named after Gaetano Filangieri because he reformed the prison system there. These are just a few of the really radical ideas for that time.
Uh-huh.
This was a kingdom.
Yeah.
His son, Carlo Filangieri, was a criminal. He was
a war criminal.
He was a war criminal.
Not just some low-level criminal. He was a high-level criminal.
Because he was head of the king's navy.
For a while, he was more famous than Gaetano.
Right, right.
He got himself a passage in the Britannica before Gaetano.
Right.
But now Gaetano's experiencing a resurgence of interest in him.
Right, because of all the movements that are going on right now. He also wanted to make sure that the rich paid.
Right.
We should send
Bernie Sanders treatises of
Gaetano
Filangieri.
Somewhere I have his book here. So the idea,
Kim Kardashian, she's into freeing all these prisoners.
The ideas were so radical, of course, that the church had him arrested.
Ah, you hear that, Kanye? Your church there had Gaetano Filangieri arrested.
Right. So, yeah. So I followed in his footsteps.
Yeah,
I got arrested more times than him. Gaetano.
And you're a philosopher. And you reformed the prison system from the inside.
So anyway, he did a lot of stuff. It was radical ideas for that time.
Definitely.
But the thing that I mostly love and that inspired me is the idea of the pursuit of happiness. Because he kind of said that if you can't pursue happiness in life, then all the other stuff kind of sucks. What are you going to do?
Uh-huh.
You don't want to be miserable. You don't want to suffer.
It's very bonobo. You know?
And yes, a lot of his things were very bonobo.
Before anybody knew about bonobos, but it's very bonobo to say that happiness and pleasure is important to the good of society.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct.
And go ahead. Okay. Well, I wanted to say, speaking of Jesus, Kanye, Jesus is king, and Max...
Get this, Kanye.
...is, according to certain stories, a descendant of Jesus.
Jesus
and Mary Magdalene. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
And an A-women.
A-women.
Because this is the story that says, that the women are important. And that if Jesus existed, and perhaps he did, he was a descendant of King David, so he would be named Jesus Davidson, not Jesus Christ. And he would have been married, because any great teacher, any Jewish teacher, rabbi, would be married. And that probably he was married to Mary Magdalene. And y'all have read the Da Vinci Code or seen the movie, and that this was repressed by the church, this idea that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene. And in some stories, she's turned into a whore, and in some stories, she's just... some rich lady. But she was an important lady. She was his wife. And that was why the apostles were really jealous of her. But anyway, he died and she was pregnant, so the story goes. And they thought, her son will become the next great Messiah, the next leader to save us from the Romans. But she had a daughter. So, in those days, what could you do with a girl except take her away to the south of France, which is where they settled and which is where these people rose up or just kind of hung out. And some of them were called the Cathars, and they were Christians. They were very serious Christians, because they felt that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were their great-great-great-great-grandparents. And that's one reason that they were against the church and its creation of this myth of Jesus being celibate and it all being all about the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and no wife, no woman, And so these people... they were there, and they established their rituals and their beliefs, and they're very interesting. But the thing that relates to Max is that when Pope Innocent, not so innocent, I have mixed feelings about that word, but anyway, Pope Innocent, he perpetrated the only crusade of Christians against Christians. And this was against the Cathars, the Albigensian crusade. And so he killed 30,000 of them, and some of them left and went to Italy, because believe it or not, even though the Vatican was in Italy, they didn't know that they were there in Italy. And so they left, and they were from this place called Angers in France. And when they came to Italy, they became known as the Sons of Angers, or in Italian, Filangieri. And that's Max's last name, Filangieri. And so, you know, he's a descendant of Jesus.
There you have it.
There you have it, you know. So
I'm going to pass the basket around now.
Because you want donations.
Little bread.
And that's why the church perpetrated those crusades, because they thought you guys would start saying, hey, you know, I've got some rights. I've got the bloodline. That's the Holy Grail right there.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. No, I mean, but, and they used to, interestingly, because, of course, you have done work, much, much groundbreaking, revolutionary work in the field of X-rated publishing. And because they didn't want to say who they were, they would sign their names with an X. That was their signal, X. And you'll see in a lot of art, including Da Vinci, X's that are a symbol of this, you know. So that's why they call it the Da Vinci Code, one of the reasons. Anyway, so back to Max himself, descendant of Jesus and Gaetano Filangieri. But he's just a little boy in Italy. And he always had this kind of back and forth between being a prince and being just a wild animal. And so there's the monarchy and there's the anarchy in your life. And I think when it first came out that I know is when the nuns tried to make you go to school.
Yeah, so I'm living in Naples, Italy, and I'm just a little kid and I have to go to kindergarten. And I'm living with my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my aunt, my Jewish uncle, and my mom. And so they get me all cuted up and little white bow, little dress.
Little dress.
Little black dress.
They cross-dressed you then, huh?
Yeah, and the school was right across the street. So the day comes that I have to go to school.
Yeah.
And I'm fucking terrorized.
Aww.
By this idea that I have to go someplace to, because I never liked the nuns. I always saw the nuns running around.
Scary.
And you know, little Naples, everybody's short. So if you drive from Milan, you get to Rome, you pass Rome, everybody's 4 feet tall. Okay. So all these little nuns running around, and they always terrified me. I didn't know what to do with them. So they take me over to the nuns, and they try to take me in, and the doors are very small. This is way, way back. This is an ancient building, and it has two little wood doors. So one foot goes here, the other foot goes here. I start screaming. They drag me in. They literally drag me in. Of course, there's all these other kids, so I stop screaming.
Yes.
Yes.
You're right. Public.
Hi.
I'm not a baby.
Yeah.
I am not a Trump baby.
So I go through this indoctrination, why I'm here, and all of this stuff here. And then lunchtime comes. Lunchtime. Okay. That's my moment to escape. So we're all eating. Everybody has their little soup. I dump the soup under the table. Put the soup there. I'm done eating. I can get up. And as soon as I get up, I disappear and I run across the street to my house and to my grandma and to my grandma, you know. At the top of the stairs, there's a huge statue, probably bigger than that piano, of this person. I forget what it was even. And I run over there and I hide behind the statue.
Sanctuary.
Yeah, my sanctuary. I hide behind the statue, and pretty soon they notice that I'm missing.
Yeah.
Right? So there's this cavalry of nuns running across the street, and I hear them downstairs in the courtyard. And then I hear them coming up the stairs.
Uh-oh.
And I'm behind a fucking statue. And then I wait for the right moment, and I run out, and I try to push him down the stairs. But it didn't work.
You were kind of little.
I was captured. And my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my aunt, they all come running out. There's all this screaming and yelling. And that was my first day at school. And I never, ever wanted to go back.
And your first day as an anarchist.
And probably, yes.
You did not want to be indoctrinated.
I didn't want to be indoctrinated, which later I'll tell the story of how my children never went to school. Because I didn't believe the Gaetano, what Gaetano Filangieri was saying, that every child should be
indoctrinated
by the state with their values and their ideas.
Yeah,
anyway, that was my first step into anarchy, you know?
Yeah. So you've gone back and forth between the monarchy and the anarchy, and then...
Well, yeah, because there's two systems. There's only two systems in the world. You can say there's communist, there's this, there's that. There are two systems.
Yeah.
There's the monarchy.
Yeah.
Which are the people that are in charge.
With money.
Yeah.
Because like your Lobkowitz side, how did they get their title? How did they become princes? Because they were shepherds that made a lot of money.
They
bought it.
Yeah, they all made this up. Kings, they said, I'm the king of the land. I am the landlord and I am the king. And they declared themselves kings.
Yeah.
You know?
They got an army.
My hand.
Fight other people
on the side of the... Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they got their titles and all of these things because they were sheep herders.
Yeah.
They were the Austro-Hungarian Empire's sheep herders. They were like one of the billionaires today.
Yeah, so there's the people with the money and then the people
and
without
then,
the
right,
money.
So the two systems are this. There's the guy, people on top, and then there's the anarchist below, okay? And if you look at history very carefully, the anarchists always overthrow the monarchists or the ruling class. And then they become the ruling class.
So far.
And then they have to be kicked out.
Until Bernie Sanders gets to be president.
So, yeah, Bernie. Hi, Bernie.
Hey, Bernie. He's still older than you, by the way.
He's older than me?
He's older than you, yeah.
Well, I wish him luck. Bernie, I'm 76, and I heard you had a heart attack. I feel bad.
Yeah, no.
I had a quadruple bypass,
Bernie. You're doing good. You're doing good. You're doing great.
I am.
You are. Yeah, you're really healthy these days.
I'm due for a heart attack.
Sunshine's due for a heart attack.
So that was my first anarchy, my first rebellion against what I perceived as an enemy in a way. Someone who wanted to grab hold of me and really tell me these stories.
Yeah,
and I'd heard these stories, and I'm in Italy in the 1950s with crosses everywhere and this fucking guy hanging there bleeding. And
you're in the upper class. You were a prince, little prince.
So imagine. That all terrified me. So anyway, so...
So then, after a while, you had to leave. You know, everybody had to go.
So where did I leave?
Well, you all had. I'm skipping ahead. There's a bunch of stories, but then you turned seven, and your family went with a bunch of royalty. They were like royal refugees. They were like, the migrant royalty.
I was having,
going on a ship. Where's
I was
that
having,
ship?
Let's show the ship. Here's the ship.
Here, that's why ship. I'm wearing, you know, captain's
ship,
garb.
How about that ship? This is the last menu. And it says on the back, this is the ship that I came to America on. This was the last dinner. It's a ship
that
I took.
Eventually.
Yeah.
There is the ship that little Max, first developed his nautical fetish on that ship.
So this ship here.
Captain Max.
So this ship here, at night.
Here, let me hold it. Let me have the... you want to leave it there?
So I got a fetish out of this ship, okay? And, First of all, one of the reasons we came to America is because my dad worked for American intelligence before it was the CIA. And he knew Mussolini and he knew Hitler. He spoke 8 languages. He was very well educated, the prince. Actually, we should have a picture of the prince.
Oh, the prince. I have him one of the slides.
Oh, you do?
There he is.
There he is.
Arab spectator.
That's my
prince
dad.
Prince Lobkowitz. Prince Peter Lobkowitz, wearing his regalia, you know.
That's the Maltese cross he's wearing. He was a 33rd.
That's Prince Lobkowitz.
He was a 33rd Mason.
Oh, that's your dog.
That's my dog, Robert.
Robert, right. French dog. He's also a descendant of Jesus, the dog. Okay.
Yeah. That's my daddy. And what was he doing here? He was in Lebanon. This is
Lebanon.
In Lebanon.
He was making a deal.
Yeah, he was making a deal. The deal was called Laetril.
Almonds.
Almonds. Anti-cancer drug. One of the first ones that he developed, that they tried to develop with Dr. Krebs, I believe his name is, a Canadian doctor.
Peter Francis Lobkowitz.
Yeah.
Looks very serious.
He's very serious.
Yes, he's definitely very for serious. The monarchy.
This guy had more chicks.
That's the anarchistic part, the sex.
He had more women.
He had an anarchy of women,
a harem of women. Yeah,
he did, including
but he was
your
great.
Mother.
He was great. I want to tell you something about my dad. My dad was one of the great con artists of all time.
Ah.
He made his money.
Much more effective than Trump.
He made his money as an arms dealer. Arms dealer. So what he did during the Cuban Revolution is he was more of a socialist, communist kind of guy. So he sold the really good rifles to Castro. And he sold the really bad rifles to Batista.
Wow. That's why Castro won, because of your dad.
So he had the latest weapons, Mr.
But you
Castro.
Became anti-war.
But I certainly became anti-war.
But I'm wearing a Lobkowitz family pin on my hat.
And I sort of became a socialist. When I was young, John D. Rockefeller used to come over to our house, the old Rockefeller guy.
That's the Lobkowitz pin.
Yeah.
This is the Lobkowitz rig right here. I got the rig and the pin. I'm all Lobkowitzed out.
And this,
I don't have any Phil and Jerry regalia.
No, wait a minute. I have something here.
Oh, you're going to give me something.
Oh, here it is. This is the Phil and Jerry finger.
There it is, the F finger. So you went on this ship.
Okay, no, I was somewhere else.
Oh, you're somewhere else?
Where was I? I got interrupted.
Oh, well, your dad and the Laetril.
Oh, okay, so dad was a weapons
right.
dealer.
Selling to Batista, yes, yeah. But the better weapons
and
to
he hung
Castro.
Out. He hung out with the Kennedys and Johnson and Senator Kiefauer, and they were all involved in all kinds of.
Did he get women for John F. Kennedy?
I don't know what he did there, but I do remember one thing. When they opened their offices in Washington, D.C., I walked in and I saw my dad in the lobby, and he was holding hands with this woman. And I started to walk towards him. That's my dad. And my dad goes with his hand. Get out of here. Don't come here. Anyway.
Not on the weekend.
Okay, so Gerald Brown says happy birthday, Mr. Max. That's Captain Max or Prince Max. But thank you, Gerald. And as always, Susan Block has been looking this much hotter than you are stunning.
I think he's ESL.
Okay.
Are you talking
Thank
about
you.
My wife?
But I am getting a little hot. I'm wearing my...
Let's turn this on.
No, I'm going to take off my, sailor thing. But you can turn that
Thank
on,
you,
I guess.
Joe.
And then I'll put
That's
it on.
That's very nice. I like that.
Because I put it on for your nautical fetish.
So I won't tell you much more about my dad... Except the Batista people were very pissed off. They were mad.
Oh, yeah.
They were really angry. And so one day I went to the door while my parents were traveling, because my parents were never at home.
Oh, you've already gotten to New Jersey, by the way.
Yeah, I'm already in Jersey.
Well, you skipped.
Oh, wait a minute.
Coming on the ship.
Let me get on the ship.
And you're a refugee coming to the promised land of Montclair, New Jersey.
Right. So after the war, my dad decided to take his family to the new land.
Yeah.
To the land of freedom. Yes, sir. Land of freedom.
Pursuit of happiness.
And pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
Oh, there I am.
Well, that's later. That's later. He wasn't that old.
He's so cute.
That's when I was doing Elvis imitations.
Yeah. That's when he was 15 and getting laid.
15, yeah. I had more chicks.
Not that we're recommending it.
Yeah. No, I recommend it highly if you're young.
I'm not.
And don't turn.
No, I lost my virginity.
Don't
at
turn
16.
Them in. Don't turn your teacher in. Don't do that.
Don't turn your teacher in.
Okay, so we get on this ship, and it's the first time I also kind of meet Americans, and Americans are really the only Americans I know are soldiers. And as a little kid, we would go to the base there to get our paperwork and do all that kind of stuff. And we got on a ship called l'Italia, which I showed you before.
This is the Italia.
And, of course, we were in first class. It was all very wonderful. And I hung out with the...
Princess.
Wait, Savoia.
What is her name? I've got it right here.
She's the daughter of the last king of Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Princess Maria Gabriella of Savoy.
Savoyan.
Hi, Princess Maria Gabriella. Wherever you are.
Remember me, I'm the cute kid with the big blonde hair on his head.
Don't you steal
That's
my
me.
Husband.
And so there would be these great parties at night. Imagine the ship, you know, this is 1950s.
It's a few years after the Titanic, and they built them better then.
And it was a smaller ship, too. So I were on this ship, and my parents would always go out at night, and they would go dancing and so forth. And, of course, as soon as they left, I would sneak out late at night, and I would run around the ship. But the ship, it wasn't like ships today. These were ships. There was no, snow slide or this was a ship. And I would go, and I would go to where they were dancing, and I would watch all the people dance out there. And people would come out, and I would kind of hide out. And then I found the spot that kind of changed my life and kind of made me fearless, right under the bridge. And I would go there at night.
Pay no attention to the woman.
We're just having a little
curtain.
We're having a movement. What is happening here?
Well, you're going to finish your story, and then something's going to happen.
And I would sit there getting soaking wet as this ship would dip into the ocean. And there was this beautiful ocean, dark. You couldn't see shit. There was nobody around. But I felt that spray. And I said, when I grow up, I am going to be a captain of a ship.
And you are the captain of the good ship Bonoboville. And here's your cake. And it's got peaches, because this is also an impeachment party.
Oh, yeah, it's an impeachment party.
Yeah,
right.
We're having an impeachment party. It's our sixth impeachment party. And you have a bonobo.
Look at that.
With a captain's hat, wishing you a happy birthday.
Very nice. Very, very nice. I see it.
Yeah. Look, should we, like, rip that off? Because that's...
Oh, good. Yeah. Maybe we could cut
maybe
this
we
off.
Could, before you, let's cut this off.
So...
Can we cut this...
So I wanted to be the captain of a ship, but the big fucking problem is I can't add two and two. And if you're running a ship, you better know how to add two and two to figure out where you're going in the world. So, let's...
That we've got this very interesting formation here. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Okay.
All right.
So we're going to put
this
some
is my
candles
cake.
On.
Well,
this
we have 76 candles.
Right. We have 76 candles.
Right.
Yeah.
And this was Sunshine's concept. All right. So that's why she's putting the candles in.
That's it.
Oh, that's 76. Whoa, I guess
it's fine.
Oh, wait.
It's fine. It's fine.
Seven.
Seven. So, okay. So where were we? We're talking about cakes right now.
Okay.
So
we were talking about you being on the ship, okay. Just like the Titanic.
So I never got to be the captain of a ship. So this is kind of a ship to me. And,
yes. The good ship at Oberville. The ship of fools for love. Your butt is showing, so I have to spank it.
Okay. Everybody's quiet. Okay. This is radio.
Okay, so now, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Captain Max. Happy birthday to you.
Me. What was that?
Okay.
All right.
Until you blow them out.
All right. Do I blow these out?
You blow these out.
What's your wish?
Wish. Okay. Wish them all. Yay! Listen to Betsy. Betsy is singing happy birthday also.
Betsy,
isn't that funny? She comes out to sing happy birthday.
Thank you, Betsy.
You remember her from last time.
She came out to join, yeah. And she's greeting the new guy. Yeah. Yoel. Yoel de Jesus. He's also a descendant of Jesus. We have a lot of descendants of Jesus here tonight. Don't be jealous,
all
Kanye.
Right. Okay, so what are we doing now?
Okay, so now we're going to tell a couple more stories in front of the cake, and then we're going to cut it. But I want to know, just because, after all, you are a publishing revolutionary, and your publishing really started in Montclair, New Jersey.
Montclair. Hey, Montclair.
Yeah.
So, Montclair. So I come to America, I don't speak no English, not even a one a word. And the people are making out of fun of me. And I was very big though for a 7 year old. So nobody could have really pushed me around.
Yeah. Oh, not yet.
Yeah. So you lost my trend.
Oh, you were seven when you got to New Jersey.
Okay, so I got to New Jersey. I got to junior high school. I still couldn't add, and I couldn't spell, and I didn't know my grammar. But I had Mrs. Estrin, Mrs. Estrin, and she was a little old lady, and she loved me. So she would pass. Every year she would pass me. You know, she would say, okay. And excuse me, what are you doing?
I'm opening this up.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's do that. You can't talk when I'm opening it. Okay. Well,
okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Thank you.
I won't do anything.
Thank you. So she said to me, you know, Mickey, they call me Mickey. She said, I love you. You're a wonderful little boy, but you'll never, ever be a publisher or a writer.
Aw. What did she know?
Really?
Yeah. So you should, this was the people were serious. So
she should take up coal mining.
Yeah.
Or
and
something.
Then my math teacher, who had, if you guys don't remember, they had the pointed bras.
Oh yeah, the bullet bras.
The bullet bras.
Oh.
And I was bad at math. And the math teacher would come behind me, and said, "Mickey, here, let me help you." And I'd feel this this stuff behind my back.
Wow, a soft bullet, right?
Yeah, right. And I go,
boops.
I'm never going to learn math, not now, not ever. So at a certain point, there are like three Jewish kids in school. Bonnie Horowitz.
Bonnie Kellner.
Bonnie Kellner. And this ugly guy. He was also Jewish.
Oh. But Bonnie Kellner and Donna Horowitz were kind of cute.
Right. So Donna Horowitz, this was the time...
They're my predecessors.
My predecessors.
This was the time that Peyton Place was published. Most of you guys don't remember Peyton Place.
The V of her crotch.
You might remember the television show. But Peyton Place had... I forget what page it was. It had a line that said, "I touched the V of a crotch." And people went nuts. It was a bestseller. It was a time that Sputnik had been also launched. And
I wore special panties just for this moment. They say lust et veritas. Because I feel that's one of your mottos.
Yes.
Lust and truth.
Yes, lust.
Which is
lust and truth.
Take off on the Yale motto.
Yeah.
Lux et veritas.
And
sorry, Bulldogs. But.
So Donna wanted to write Peyton Place about Montclair, New Jersey.
Parody, or kind of.
Yeah. No, not
real life.
A real thing.
A real Peyton
like,
Place.
The art teacher is gay, okay?
Ooh.
And the math teacher is fucking so-and-so.
Oh, having an affair.
Having affairs. So this is all going on in this quaint little town. Quaint little town, especially then in the
19... How old were you then? Like 12 or 13?
About 12 or so, yeah. So she writes this thing and she says, "Mickey, come here," because I was pretty talented already by that age. She said, "Could you sneak into the school and print this on the mimeograph machine?"
The mimeograph machine.
Yeah. Mimeograph.
The printers.
The four photocopiers.
Mimeograph
machine. Yeah.
They printed everything in purple.
In purple, right. Everything was purple. So I would sneak into George Innes Junior High School. And it wasn't like today where the security guards and alarms and, you know, I would go down and when I go to the wood shop, I'd leave a window open. Who's that?
That's the door.
Yes. Yes?
It's a guest.
Like Jeff Spicoli and...
No, it's just Loser that walked by.
Dude.
Just
it's
Loser.
That's all. Don't worry about it. It's just Loser
fast times at
walking by.
It's the
what a loser.
Dude.
So, now...
Okay, so Donna Horowitz...
Okay, so she said, all right, so I sneak in there and I go to the principal secretary's office and I start printing this book. And I'm printing and printing. And the book starts spreading throughout George Innes Junior High School and among the teachers. And they're going, "Well, what's going on here? And who's doing this?" And Donna and Bonnie, we're laughing and so forth. And but the paper's running out and they have to order more paper. And so finally one night, I'm in there, door shut, and I'm running this machine. And I get busted.
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 By nuns. No,
yeah,
by
no,
the
not
principal.
By nuns.
Just kidding.
By Mr. Edgerton.
Oh,
that was his name.
The assistant principal.
I remember him very well.
Disciplinarian.
Yeah. Him and the secretary, the school secretary. And so I got suspended. I got suspended from school. To which my dad said, "Well, you can't really do that. This is, you know, what is this? What kind of?"
What about the pursuit of happiness?
Yeah. What about the
life
so,
and liberty?
He said, "I take care of things," and his limousine used to come and pick him up every morning from New York, and so he drove me to school, and the limousine pulled up in the around the driveway. And we went in, and Mr. Edgerton was sitting there, and my dad, and me, and some, I forget, there were a couple of other people. Okay, get this. All right, this is 1950s. My dad pulls out a Camel cigarette.
Yeah.
And lights it up right there. And he says, son, do you want one?
Ah, even better.
Anyway, then they kicked me out of the room, and then I got reinstated somehow.
Oh.
But that was my first bust. Yeah.
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 At 12 years old. Wow.
Yeah, 12 years old. Yeah.
Betsy's so opinionated. And
you don't count the nuns, huh? Which was kind of a bust also. The nuns.
Yeah, but this was a publishing.
This was your first American bust. This first was my bust for publishing.
Yeah. You know right. What? I actually ought to add that to my busts.
The first one, this one.
This one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Nowadays, they probably would put it on your record.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, yeah. So.
Put you in Juvie Hall.
Yeah, Juvie Hall, right. During that time, too, sometimes in the summertime, I want to tell this story because it's always very touching to me. I was sitting under my pine tree in front of my house. And I'm a little kid, and it's probably 1955. And I go, who am I going to marry? What is her name? What does she look like? And I sat under the pine tree and thinking. And suddenly, I saw this little blonde girl, and she was a doctor. Yeah, she was a doctor. And I had this image, and it came and it went. And then I thought, I wonder what her name is. You know, and I'm trying to figure it out, and I couldn't figure it out. And many years later, I figured out that block, B-L-O-C-K, those letters are in Lobkowitz.
Yeah, that's what you realized. You thought her name will be inside of my name.
My name, right.
Yeah, that's one thing that came to you while you were under the tree.
Under the tree. And in 1955, she was born.
Uh-oh, not supposed to say that.
So life is a little strange, eh?
Strange.
Very strange. So, okay. So
we're going
we
to publishing. We're skipping ahead.
Okay, so let's skip ahead real quick here because we have a long life, 76
Very
years.
Very long life. We have
76
to do
years
more
of this stuff here. So I came to the land of the free. I believed in the land of the free. I believed in my philosophy, parentage and writers and all of that. And I was looking for Susan also, that girl that I saw under the pine tree. I married two wrong ones.
The first one was named Susan, though.
Before I found her.
Three's the charm.
Yeah. So you can imagine the kid that was born during the middle of the war and had to travel all over the fucking thing, get on a ship, go across the oceans, get married twice before I actually find her. And it's Dr. Susie. So, okay, so I'm a bill collector now. Okay, I wrote a book about bill collecting. I'm a bill collector. And my brother-in-law brings some marijuana. And I started to smoke at the marijuana. I'm a smoking the marijuana.
Okay,
and
how old were you here?
Here, I was already married, and I owned a collection agency.
Do you want a prop? I mean, just smoking the marijuana?
Oh, yeah, you can undo that. And I had all the top lawyers in the city, the hospitals. I had all their collections. Excuse me a second. The silence was the lighting of the marijuana shtick. So I start smoking marijuana. I'm pretty good off. I live in Beverly Hills. I have two Porsches. I have one tangerine one.
Boy,
one,
that bill collecting business one. Is pretty good, huh?
It was good.
Wow.
Well, because when I got into the collection business, they used to send out these two old Jewish guys always. There's always these Jewish. Old Jewish guys. I'd like to get your receivables, you know. I said, wait a minute. Wait a second. I represent some of the top doctors and lawyers in the city. I'm going to find the two hot chicks with the big bazongis, okay? And I'm going to send them out there. And we cleaned up.
The bazongis do it every time.
We cleaned up. I had the hospitals. I had, and those doctors and those lawyers and those credit managers, they couldn't resist. Plus, I was paying kickbacks.
But you smoked a joint.
Yeah, so I smoked a joint, and I had an account against Ryan O'Neill. I don't know if you guys remember who Ryan O'Neill is. He was an actor of that period. And I had a $4,000 account against him. And so I called his lawyers, and I did what they called at the time, P-gagged them. I P-gagged the lawyer. You know, hi, my name's Sid Hall, and I've got some papers to serve. And I was wondering, where can I pick up your client's car?
Now, why is that called P-gag? Because
it makes a person pee? Does it have anything to do with
urine? Because it makes you pee in your pants. You scare people.
P-gagged, okay.
So
you P-gagged.
So the lawyers say, oh, and hey, hold, no, don't do that. Don't do that. We'll get the check over to you right away, $4,000. Is there any cost? No cost. Fuck the cost. Don't worry about it. Give me the $4,000. A little while later, my client calls. And he says, you remember the Ryan O'Neill deal with the $4,000? And I said, yeah, well, we're collecting it. And he said, no, listen. I made a deal with his lawyer, and we're going to settle it. I said, okay, what are we settling for? And he said, $400. We didn't really do anything, he says. I said, what? He says, $400. It was just for some parking tickets and stuff like that, so... I said, okay. So I hung up the phone, I smoked the joint, and I walked out to my general manager, and I said, this is yours. He says, what? I said, I'm leaving. And I got in my Porsche, my tangerine one, and just drove for several days. And I didn't take a dime for it. I just decided that I wanted to smoke dope and not do that.
But you didn't know what you wanted to do.
So I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I became a debt counselor. I was well known in California and especially in LA as one of the best bill collectors. Yeah, well, because my acting career helped me. I can make all kinds of different sounds and voices and so. So I went to a friend of mine who was an attorney. I said, listen, let me have a desk and I'll sit back here and I'm gonna run some ads in the LA Free Press and I'm gonna counsel people, you know, and then if we can't make a deal, I'll turn them over to you. You file bankruptcy for them and then you pay me a little, you know, a little percentage. What do they call that? Bakshish?
Bakshish.
Yeah, a little bakshish.
Kickback.
Kickback, yeah. So he said, fine. So I put an ad in, and the phone rang off the hook. And I was making some money, honey. And I get a call from a guy by the name of Paul Eberly. Paul Eberly is the managing editor of the LA Free Press. And he says,
LA Free Press, which of course was published by our friend Art Kunkin, who just passed away, and we were at his
tribute. A lot of this is a history of alternative publishing in the city of Los Angeles. So, so Paul Eberle calls me. He says, I'm the managing director, editor of the LA Free Press. I want to do a story on bill collectors. Can you, would you do an interview with us? And I said, sure, yeah, sure, come on. And we do an interview. The interview turns out to be a book. It's a long book. How to deal with the creditors, how to, you know, all of that kind of stuff. All the tricks that they play on you, you know. And a few weeks later, a few months later, Paul comes to me and goes, we all quit at the Free Press. We're starting a new paper.
Ta-da!
You're starting a new paper. Great. Okay. All right. And what is the what is this paper? It's called the LA Star. And I said, being sort of a businessman that can't count, that's why my teacher said, well, she poked me in the back.
With her chi-chi.
I said, you know, wait a minute. Now, there's my staff, by the way.
The LA Star. Yeah.
Yeah, the LA Star staff. Yeah.
Put that back up there.
There it is. Okay, that's my Paul Eberle and Shirley Eberle on each side of me. I'm the guy with the. We got 10 minutes. Wow. Okay. All right. Look at that. We hardly got through anything. So. So yeah, anyway, real quick.
Well, but we started late.
Yeah, we started six.
We'll still be recording on the other
camera.
But we started late.
Yeah.
But they're running out of power.
They're running out of power. Yeah,
yeah. We got another backup charging right now.
Okay, all right.
In a couple minutes, we're going to bring that one.
Okay. So, okay, is this one running?
Yes.
This one? Okay. All right.
And we also have the one on the far left.
Oh, the little one is running. Okay. Okay, all right.
Oh, the little one.
The little one.
So anyway, make a long story short, they asked me, will you be our business manager? I said, sure, what does that entail? So the first night, first of all, I got a great, great place for the paper, but the first night of production, there were like dozens of people from the LA Free Press there. And we put out a paper. We couldn't sell it. Nobody would buy it. It was 25 cents. It was 8 pages. And the headline was, what are you going to do when gasoline costs $5 a gallon? Everybody laughed because gasoline was 25 cents a gallon.
Right.
And we were talking about gasoline that costs $5. So nobody wanted to hear that. But about a week later, I got a picture of a woman who was painted. She was painted like they used to do back in the 70s, body paint. And I said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to put her on the front cover.
There you go.
And
that's
let's
a good
see
idea.
What happens.
Naked woman, body paint or not.
Sure enough, we couldn't print enough papers. We could not print enough papers. And we only had a few racks. And then I get a call from a guy. He says, I see you selling a lot of newspapers, huh?
Can I now show at least this? I'll show this part
this is
the
LA
Facebook
Star.
Camera. But then for this camera, we can show the full thing. So there it is.
So it turns out that this guy is the distributor for the Herald Examiner, which is on strike, and he has thousands of racks all over California, and he has nothing to put in them. And when he saw this hand-painted body, he said, I can distribute this for you. And we said, okay, how many do you need? And he says, let's start out with about 20,000. And within months, we were from San Diego all the way to the border.
All right.
Yeah.
L.A. Star.
Yeah. And the L.A. Free Press went from 100 and some odd thousand to 25,000.
Uh-oh.
And we went up to 1,000 and some 100,000 something.
You were in some rack wars with Art.
Yeah, we were smashing each other's racks. And he doesn't remember, but he actually sued me one time.
He's no longer with us, so he remembers everything now. Hey, Art.
Hey, Art. So, you okay there?
Not really, but okay. I'm fine.
We're going to end this.
No,
anyway.
We don't have to end it.
What? No.
Well, first I want to show some of your love magazines.
Okay.
I'm not snorting cocaine, just in case you just tuned in. I just have a sinus condition from all the pollution.
Here it is. No censorship anymore. The end of censorship.
Is that something? What are you showing? I don't know what he's showing.
It says no censorship anymore.
Oh.
And this... Love magazine. This was Love magazine. It was started to defend ourselves against 23 prosecutions. So we had to keep making magazines so we could make more money so that we could defend ourselves against these state attacks and religious attacks more than anything else. Religious attacks.
I want to read all these magazines.
That's right. That's because they knew you were a descendant of Jesus. Yeah.
Then I went to prison many years later, and then I came out of prison, and I decided, okay, what am I doing? So I started a regular straight paper.
Do we have pictures of the Brentwood blah blah at Beverly Hills?
No,
magazine?
But there's two copies right over there on the thing.
But I thought I put some pictures.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the Brentwood blah blah.
Okay, now one thing about my magazines that was highly unusual. Now we have the internet. Nothing was edited. I had no writers. I had no editors. Whatever you sent me, that's what I published. If you couldn't spell, you couldn't spell.
Reader written publishing, and this was. Ahead of its time, because now on the internet everything is reader written, but Max was doing reader written publishing.
Well, the thing is,
way back in the '70s, the '80s,
we wanted to find out the truth. Was the girl next door always like Playboy showed her? Was what they were telling us about sex a truth, or was that all bullshit? So. The LA Star and Finger magazines and Hate and Love and all of these magazines, they made a little cut in the veneer of our sexuality. And we peeled the skin away, and we found out that it wasn't at all like they told us.
Not at that time.
Yeah. It was much more beautifully perverted.
But maybe it's still not at all like they told us.
Right.
No. Or they tell us.
So the reason I tell you that story is because everything was contributed by the readers. And this was contributed by Joan. What's his name? Chuck? Chuck?
Chuck, what is that?
Jones.
Say? Jones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The artist.
Yeah. He created Bugs Bunny. Yeah, he created Bugs Bunny.
The creator of Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. And so he gave us that.
This
was Beverly Hills, the magazine. And I published that. I sold both of these magazines for $2 million. And this was like many, many years ago. And they gave me $500,000. And then they fired me. Yeah, so there went the $2 million.
You found me.
And then, no, okay, so I got to finish with this and then we're done.
Okay.
So I've met Susan now. I've never been to her house because I like her a lot. And I'm married and I might.
Yeah, we were friends. You didn't want to be a bad boy. No, you were a prince.
I was good. I was nice. And so one Christmas, right? It was Christmas.
Yeah.
Somebody gave me a bottle of whiskey. I thought, okay.
Glenfiddich.
Yeah, huh?
Glenfiddich whiskey. Yeah.
Right, it was. So.
Or it's scotch, yeah.
What am I going to do with it? Let me call Susan Block. See what she's doing. It's Christmas Eve. She's Jewish. I mean, what could she be doing? Right? Okay.
Eating Chinese food. What
I was just
going to
say Chinese food, right?
Okay.
Isn't that the
but before, oh, actually, before, let me go back a couple of years. I'm on an airplane. I'm on an airplane. I sit down, and a woman says, what do you do? I do this. What do you do? She says, I make masks, theater, Arlecchino masks, and so forth. And she gives me this little Arlecchino mask. She says, don't lose this. Don't lose this mask that I'm giving you. It's very important you don't lose it. So I take that. And anyway, I go to Susan's house. And there's another part, of course. Because one day when I was arrested in Rhode Island, I was driving to Ezra Pound's house, who was one of the great American poets. And
Betsy remembers Ezra Pound.
Betsy's so opinionated about
Betsy knows all about poetry.
She keeps staring at the neighbors and then starts to bark.
What was that? And when I came back to the house, on the way there, I saw a poster that said Plastic Cash.
My play.
And it was her play in the middle of Connecticut, right? The limo stops at a blinking red light.
But he didn't come.
Yeah. And I said to my wife then, I said, we have to go see that because I was against plastic. Okay. I'm still against plastic.
Wow.
But these were plastic credit cards. So, So anyway, I go to her house. I've got my little whiskey. I knock on the door. She opens the door. I'm nervous. My legs are shaking. He's going, yeah, what are you doing? What are you doing?
He.
He.
Mr.
He said,
Happy.
Get out of here. Go. But I walk in, and as I walk in, I see a poster. It says, Plastic Cash. Oh. And I said, wait a minute.
Destiny.
What are you doing with this on your wall? She says, I was in it in Connecticut. I said,
Commedia
I know.
Dell'arte.
Yeah, yeah, Commedia dell'arte. I said, I know that poster. I saw it at a red light in the middle of nowhere. It was on a tree. She goes, yeah. I said, that's wild. Yeah. Okay, I walk into the living room and there's a big picture there. Of a mask.
Say mask.
A little mask.
Oh.
But this is a big picture of the mask that the lady on the plane gave me.
Whoa.
The same mask.
An Arlecchino mask.
And I said, okay, what the fuck's going on here? Who are you? She goes, oh, I went to Italy to this school there to learn how to make masks. And this was so-and-so. I said, I know her. I met her on a plane. She goes, oh, yeah. No, I have the mask. Let me show you the mask. I'll bring the mask to you. And I went back to the office a few days later and to get the mask. And there was no mask. It disappeared. And it had sat on my desk for years. And I remember she said, don't ever lose that mask.
So you think somebody threw it away, or
no? I found Susan. I found.
I found
a little girl from my dreams, and so I.
The he mask, didn't need the mask.
Yeah, I went back somewhere. Anyway, okay, so we're gonna eat cake.
Well, yeah. So then you publish.
That's amazing.
We should give a little pitch.
Oh, yes.
For our magazine, because now you publish the Speakeasy Journal. This is Splash and Art, featuring Chef B Live and Danielle Watts, who we mentioned earlier. Happy birthday, Danielle!
Yeah,
too.
Happy birthday!
And some other people. It's very exciting, and it's all about splashing. And then there's Spankin' Art. Okay. Of course, we have cover pictures by Jux Lee, who happens to be taking a picture.
Yeah.
And we have the Bonobo Way, and it's also the anniversary of the Bonobo Way, which is the story of the Make Love, Not War chimpanzees who swing from the trees as well as with each other. And Max and I kind of discovered bonobos together in 1993, just after we were newlyweds. And we were just swinging through the trees ourselves. And then we found these fabulous creatures who are so close to human. They are 98% genetically similar to us. Plus, the females rule Bonoboville. Females are empowered. And the males are happy, male well-being, and they never kill anybody. So it just shows that all that Max, all of his stuff that he's worked for fits together with bonobos, the sex and being anti-war. It really does make sense when you look at bonobo culture. And so, yeah, so, you know, finally we wrote a book. I wrote a book, but Max is always a part of everything I do. And gave it to you on your birthday 5 years ago. So how do you think it's held up? What do you think of bonobo philosophy, bonobo lifestyle?
I think it's doing very well, and I think it's held up. And you've certainly influenced various sectors of the sex community. And I think especially people in the sex community, educators and therapists and teachers and all of that, are starting to understand what bonobos are about, and that we should really adopt these kids here because they're about
We really need to save them from extinction.
Right, right. We need to save them. And we need to save ourselves.
And they will help us save ourselves.
Yeah, that's very important to try
because
to save
because they teach
yourself.
Us peace through pleasure. And as Gaetano Filangieri said, how to take care of the earth, ecosexual engagement with our environment so we can be happy without destroying our environment and all of life on earth. We're not going to destroy the earth, but we might destroy life on earth. So, happy birthday, Bonobo Way. Happy birthday, Max.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, everybody. And yes, now we're going to eat
thank
cake.
Thank you.
So where's a knife? Don't put your down. Ashes on the cake. So we've got this fabulous cake with peaches because we're also celebrating the impeachment of Donald Trump, who's over here, and who I'm going to spank some more.
We have pizza.
We have pizza.
This high-class operation, but I'm Italian, so
we have
cake
and pizza, all the carbs. And so what do you think, Max, just real quick? I mean, presidents, you've been through like 6 or 7 presidents. What do you think of this one compared to the others?
Well, first of all, he's not president.
He's president dunce.
Huh? We're losing power. Okay. What do I think of him? Not much. The guy's a criminal. Vote him out.
Impeach.
Impeach the son of a gun. Impeach the son of a gun.
Impeach.
Get him out of here. It's not good for America. I know I'm a little kid that came over here. This is not what it's about. This is not what it's about.
They don't have fresh peaches anymore in the grocery store, so we had to get canned. And also, I'm drinking vitamin-enhanced peach blackberry.
All right, we're running out. We're done.
Okay.
Good. Goodbye.
Be good. Be happy. Try not to hurt anyone, including yourself. Practice the bonobo way. Make love, not war. Make love to someone you love tonight. Hopefully you have a prince or a princess or somebody, but make love to someone you love tonight, even if that someone is you. I love you. And Max loves you. Happy birthday, Max! Let's eat cake. Let them eat cake.
Power to the people.
Need to talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves. but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience or a combination, my world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, fantasize with you. No fantasy is too taboo, and help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime.
With someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk with us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience, or a combination. My world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, and fantasize with you. And no fantasy is too taboo. And we help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. If you've never called before, don't be embarrassed. We all need help with sex at one time or another. Even world leaders do. Maybe especially world leaders do. But I'm not going to tell you which ones. So, when you need to ask a question or play out a fantasy or just talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else, call us at 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Block, and I've just written a new book called The Bonobo Way, inspired by my love for the Make Love, Not War great apes. You know, the ones who have a lot of sex in a bonobo sutra of positions, including face-to-face. But it's not just how bonobos have sex. It's how they use sex to prevent murder and war. Really. They're the only great apes that have never been seen killing each other. They practice what I call peace through pleasure, with the females gently dominating the very happy, very sexually satisfied males. Bonobos are special, partly because they just are, and partly because they're very, very close to us, almost 99% genetically similar to us. When it comes to being human, even being humane, bonobos can teach us so much. Which brings me to us, and more specifically to you. Is your inner bonobo longing to swing free? Would you like to tap into the hot, natural sex energy within you? Bet you would. So you can better enjoy the pleasures in life and cope with the pain. You know, the pain. And have more orgasmic, organic, sustainable sex. Who doesn't want that? Greater lust, greater trust, and better anger management. And who couldn't use a little bit of that these days? So get the book, Learn the Bonobo Way. You'll be glad you did. Then you'll want to join Bonoboville, a new global village for bonobo lovers and friends. And one last thing. The real bonobos are highly endangered, so a portion of all book sales go to bonobo conservation groups working to save the wild bonobos from extinction. Read The Bonobo Way and learn why this could be the most important eco-sexual movement of our times. And improve your love life.